Hey, welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standick here. It is, I guess we could call this NBA schedule announcement day, sort of. We don't have the full thing. Okay, let's just be up front with that. But we do have two pieces of big information with regards to the Wizards 2017-18 season. I'm not going to tease it for you. I'm going to tell you that right now. I will, after that, get into part two of my interview with pal Todd Dye before we go into the Wizards offseason. But the Wizards, here's what we know. Opening night, NBA season, October 18th, the Washington Wizards are playing on the NBA's first night of the season, and they're doing it at home, something that our pal Todd would very much like you to be mindful of, because that's something the Wizards just don't do. They are indeed playing at home and doing it against the Philadelphia 76ers. That means, hopefully, knock on wood for those who like good basketball and entertainment, Joel Embiid. It also means the NBA debut of number one overall pick and local product Markelle Fultz. So that is a pretty exciting matchup. The tanking Sixers are long gone. They should be potentially even a playoff team this year with all their young talent. Either way, the Wizards opening night at home. Now the other big news. There's one big day on the NBA calendar that everybody pays attention to. Not talking finals. I'm talking a specific date on the calendar. You know what the date is. December 25th, what the way people often say is the true start of the NBA season. Five games on that day. You already knew that Cleveland and Golden State would be there just because that's what happened. You probably even figured the Knicks because of New York and the Lakers because of Los Angeles would be on there. You could probably guess Russell Westbrook and some others. One of those others, indeed, the Washington Wizards. December 25th, the Wizards are on the road for this one. And now, come on, you know where they're going. At Boston to play the Celtics. Matchup of last year's riveting NBA Eastern Conference playoff semifinal. That'll be a lot of fun. So this means Markieff Morris opens the season against his hometown team. And then the Philadelphia native on Christmas Day gets to play his brother Marcus, who is now with the Celtics. So that is some pretty interesting stuff right there. If you follow me on Twitter at Ben Standig, you know, you saw I've tweeted a couple times here and there that I thought the Wizards, I thought they had a pretty good shot to play on Christmas Day. And the matchup with the Celtics seemed like the obvious one. You knew the Celtics would be there. I mean, look, they made the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They were the one seed. They had a pretty interesting offseason getting Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum. And, the Celtics, right? I mean, one of the legendary franchises of the NBA. So you knew they were going to be on. So then the question would be, well, who would they face? And if you look at the East, Cleveland, Golden State, right? Seemed fairly obvious that would happen. I actually thought the Sixers would get on. The Sixers are on. They're playing the silly Knicks. because of course the NBA has got to have the Knicks on the slate. I get it, New York, yada yada yada. But that is happening. Let me run down the whole Christmas Day slate here. Hold on, pull up my Twitter account. Where did I put this thing? This is terrible radio, podcast, whatever I'm doing here. Okay, here we go. The day starts 12 o'clock East Coast time. The 76ers at the Knicks. I know the Knicks probably won't be very good, but nonetheless, if everybody's healthy, you got Joel Embiid, Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons as well, Dario Saric for Philly. On the Knicks, you got Porzingis, and you got Carmelo Anthony, assuming he doesn't get traded. So if we just look at it from that perspective, that's a fairly interesting matchup. The next game, 3 o'clock. I'm a little surprised it's this early, but okay. I guess that for the TV purposes. I mean, Christmas is a Monday this year? I don't know. In any event, LeBron James at the Golden State Warriors. And I say it like that because unless we know Kyrie Irving is there, it does feel like it's sort of LeBron against Golden State. In any event, no disrespect to Kevin Love, but that's how it is. 3 o'clock, that is on ABC. The first game is on ESPN. After that, now, of course, comes the real main event. 5:30, also on ABC, Wizards at Celtics. Ken, last year, the home teams, those two teams played 11 times. The home team won 11 games. So I would infer that the Celtics may have a leg up there, but we will see when the time comes. They got the last two games. Houston Rockets at Oklahoma City Thunder. So we got James Harden and Chris Paul against Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Last but not least, interesting matchup for the future. The Minnesota Timberwolves, they add Jimmy Butler this offseason to go with Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins playing. The Lakers, obviously the big headline for the Lakers these days is Lonzo Ball. It's pretty interesting. They've got a lot of young talent. Added Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Brandon Ingram was number two pick in the 2016 draft. So I think some pretty interesting matchups. I mean, worth noting, no San Antonio Spurs. I can't say it's that surprising to me. I just don't feel like the Spurs, they historically, the running joke was always they didn't have a huge, you know, Q rating. But I feel like it's even worse right now. You know, it's kind of hard to, you know, they didn't make any interesting moves in the offseason. Kawhi Leonard, tremendous player. I thought he should have been the league MVP this past season, but obviously from a personality standpoint, it's non-existent. And, you know, Minnesota is just more interesting. And obviously the Lakers, because of LA, are going to get on. So it is what it is. That's the Christmas Day schedule. Wizards are up there. I was noting, if you're a DC sports fan and you like the Wizards and the Redskins play on Thanksgiving. The Redskins also play on Christmas Eve. The Wizards play on Christmas, and the Redskins also play on New Year's Eve. So good luck with your family on that. I don't know what to tell you on that one. Somebody told me the Christmas Day game is also Hanukkah for those of us in my tribe. So there's that. But it's not exactly the same. It's not an apples to apples comparison, just to be honest. All right. So that is that. I'm going to, I guess they're going to release the rest of the schedule fairly soon, so we should have more on that. But for now, let's get back to some Wizards talk. If you heard part one of my conversation with Todd Dybas, we spoke on this on the day that John Wall's recent press conference. Part one of our conversation was all about John Wall. I called it Wallapalooza. Talked about his contract. Why did he sign it so quick? Is John Wall going to be the face of the DC sports by next year? His candor, a whole bunch of things, good conversation there. Here in part two, we get into some non-John Wall topics. We talk about, we haven't had Todd on the podcast, probably since the start of the offseason, I don't think. So we get his take on the various Jody Meeks, Tim Frazier of it all. The timing of some of the moves I find to be a pretty interesting topic. We also got into who is the player that we think is really, obviously, you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal and so on are the stars of the team. But there was a certain player that we both thought is pretty big in terms of the Wizards making that extra leap. And we'll get into that. And also, Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Wizards, made a point at the press conference of saying that the Wizards are the only team in the league with three homegrown players that all have max contracts. He made it into a positive, understandably so. But Todd and I pondered that thought and whether, in fact, it truly is a positive for the Wizards. So we'll get into all that. Of course, if you want to hear part one or any of our podcasts, you can go to find us on iTunes or anywhere else you do your podcasting. And by the way, seeing as how the Wizards will be playing the 76ers on opening night, don't forget to check out the Locked On 76ers podcast for the take of presumably they'll talk about the opening night matchup, but also what's to come of the upcoming offseason. It is a very interesting one indeed for Philadelphia. So check out the Locked On 76ers podcast. All right, here we go. Myself, Todd Dybas, talking Wizards site. Let's get to the offseason again. We have not had you grace the podcast, I don't know since when. So, you know, the world has not truly heard your take on a few things here. You know, for those who have been away or forgot or whatever, the basic rundown for the Wizards this offseason beyond the John Wall extension and re-signing restricted free agent Otto Porter, they trade their 2017 second round pick to the Pelicans for point guard Tim Frazier, so backup for John Wall. On the second day of free agency, they sign shooting guard Jody Meeks, who they hope will give them a 3-point threat off the bench. On the fourth day of free agency, they signed former Hawks forward Mike Scott, who was a key contributor on that Hawks team that won the Eastern Conference regular season a couple years ago, but his last year was an utter disaster for reasons on and off the court. And basically that's it. They, you know, they're, they signed two-way players, Mike Young and Dev Robinson, but that probably won't have any impact on the team this year. You still got the Sheldon Mack, Daniel Loshefu, Chris McCullough, trifecta there at the end of the bench. They were all in summer league. They'll add some people for training camp, but in essence, that's what they did. Most of those moves happened a month ago or so. Based on all that, I guess what's your if I make you pick a grade, pull out the red pen, or maybe it's a what's a positive color? Green, blue? I don't know. Whatever. Pull out your pen. You're gonna write down a grade on the piece of paper with all the Wizards moves. Mm-hmm. What's your grade?
Oh, jeez, you put me on the spot there.
Well, I'll tell you that I think your boy Kevin Pelton with ESPN, let me pull. I think he gave them a C, sort of just a yeah. And basically, it was like right in the middle of the East, and obviously that's what a C is. But some teams like Cleveland were just, and Chicago he crushed. Other teams like Philadelphia and I guess Boston he thought were good. Wizards were sort of
I find myself often aligned with Kevin's thought process. He's someone that you've had on here and you've mentioned that you like him, and I have great respect for what he does. And the first thing that popped, except for Brandon Jennings, he was pro Brandon Jennings. I was anti Brandon Jennings. And so that puts our lifetime scores at Pelton, 1,463 correct and me correct once. Anyway, the first thing that popped in my head when you asked me for a grade was C plus, because I'll add the plus because these were spots that they needed to address and they were able to do that. But these are also, I feel like these are very much Ernie Grunfeld style. Well, if this really, really works out perfect, then this could be a home run signing kind of things. I don't feel like we see a lot of these secondary or bench signings as, we definitely know what this guy is, and he's going to be able to give us X. He doesn't have some injury history that we have to, cross our fingers doesn't come up again. He hasn't been doing dumb stuff off the court, and we have to cross our fingers it doesn't come up again. And he's not a backup point guard who can't guard anyone, yet we're giving up picks for him, which they keep seeming to do. Those sorts of things. I know that's kind of the life of a bench player anyway. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a bench player, right? But it would seem you would accumulate over the years someone who would stick around and give you something for sure instead of this, well, we're going to flip the whole bench again, essentially for at least the third consecutive year, right? That we're going to have all these new dudes behind our starters. So Mike Scott intrigues me. I will say that. If he has his act together, I remember when he was on the Hawks, when the Hawks were good, I was like, this guy is a very viable bench player. He plays tough. He can shoot threes. He's athletic. And these are things that would all be beneficial for the Wizards. Of course, as he said, speaking of people being candid, he was absolutely terrible last year, and so many things derailed for him, both professionally, on the floor and personally away from the floor, that he is a long ways to go to be a good piece for them. But I do think that's an option. Tim Frazier is my annual backup point guard shrug for these guys. I'm still amazed that should have been one of the questions today. John, do you think by the end of this extension, the Wizards will have finally found a viable backup for you for more than a season? Or even a season, do you think that will happen by the time you are 32 years old? Or are you going to play your entire double-digit year career without someone behind you who is a good player? Two things we heard today, a little semi-newsy. One, Jan Mahimi had another knee procedure after the end of the season. Scott Brooks eventually told us that after trying to bob and weave his way around the question. We kind of had a nice group pinned down there. And then Ben asked specifically about Mahimi, and it was amazing to watch Brooks kind of be like, wait, well, let me think. Maybe, oh, yeah.
Which one is Mahimi?
Wait a minute, what?
The tall guy?
He's the tall guy. So Mahimi had a knee surgery, and he's also apparently lost weight, which is good. Usually those things are the opposite. Go the opposite way, right? You have surgery, you're stagnant, you gain some weight. But apparently he had another knee surgery. We don't know on which knee or exactly what it was, I don't believe. At least I didn't hear that part of the equation by the end of the day. But also that he weighs 238 pounds. That and that Satoransky, despite Satoransky in his head, apparently still thinking that he's a point guard, first, second, and third. Scott Brooks still sees him as a whatever, quote-unquote, positionless type of player that can guard multiple guys because of his size and play different positions and kind of move around and be on the floor at the same time as John. I understood Scott Brooks' explanation there that, you know, Brad and Satoransky can play together, Wall and Satoransky can play together, blah, blah, blah. You want multiple ball handlers and kind of these guys who can do multiple things. That makes perfect sense. That still doesn't define who, if you have to get into an offense, who is the point guard, right? Are you just running pick and roll and playing random off of that, or are you running sets and running things? And then when Satoransky's on the floor with one of those guys, who is doing that?
All right, well, before you talk too much about Satoransky and have to pay royalty fees to a Liddell's place, let me go back to the to the guys that they added, Meeks and Scott. I mentioned that the Wizards signed them on the second and fourth day of free agency, and
this is one of your favorite things, right?
Oh, this was the thing that drove me crazy about Marcus Thornton last year. Now, you know, again, people who listen to the podcast know, like, for like a month, I was saying Jody Meeks made sense as a guy that, for the need that the Wizards had and the cost would, where the cost would be. And obviously it worked out that way. So I'm down with the thing, and I'm not even freaked out by he got 2 for $7 million. I mean, the interpretation sort of from the Wizards side is, hey, if he's healthy, he's going to cost more. He's been really good. They had tried to get him in the past. Somebody always outbid them. They think on some, like, on that level alone, they feel like they almost got him at a discount for in their head how they view him. But, okay, whatever. That said, when you do it on the second day of free agency, you don't know what's going to be available, say, a month later. And over the last month, here are some of the other moves that have happened. And again, Mike Scott, too. He got the bare minimum, like 1.7 for his level free, veteran, but, you know, again, it's maybe not the player or the move, it's the timing. So, for example, over the last month, Ian Clark, a guy who I think for me was like the second two guard I had for like, I thought would be good for the Wizards.
Yeah, he's a guy we both liked every time we saw him and otherwise we would constantly talk about him.
Yeah, so he got 1 year, $1.6 million just the other day with the Pelicans. Thabo Sefolosha, if you think that the Wizards needed more of a wing defender, he got 2 for $10.5 million. Aaron Aflalo, a guy who's had success in a career, but he's, you know, on the back nine at this point, he got 1 for $2.3 million. I'm just going to mention Jeff Green got 1 for $2.3 million. I'm not saying that, whatever, but he went to Cleveland, whatever.
And what happened? The Jeff Green effect. Kyrie wants out. The place is a disaster. He's going to have to play heavy minutes. One night he'll score 38 points. The next 2 weeks, he'll average 4.3 points per game.
Luke Mbamute got 1 for $2.1 million. Another defensive-minded guy goes to Houston. I think he'll help then. Honestly, maybe my favorite straight-up signing of the whole thing, partly because he's part of the tribe. Omri Caspi gets 1 for $2.1 million of the Golden State. Now, maybe nobody else could have gotten him from that. Maybe he only takes out Golden State because of what they're about, but that's a great move. And then, I wouldn't say this is a value play, but Bojan Bogdanović, he got 2 for $21 million from Indiana. That's obviously a lot more than 2 for $7 million, but you had him here. He was already here. He obviously had some success, by the end, you know, I think I'm sort of making the Bojan Bogdanović experience in my head worse than it was, but, you know, whatever. You already gave up the first round pick for him. He's an outside shooter. He can do some things. Maybe positionally wise, it's not as good as Meeks because he's a three, not a two. They needed a two. In any event, they didn't get him either. Those are just some. There's other ones you could probably point to. Does any of that make you think differently now that we're a month away from having Meeks and Scott? Whatever you thought of that, those moves then, has it changed now that you see these other things that they, you know, maybe, you never know, but maybe could have had?
I would say two things. One, Ian Clark intrigues me precisely for the reason that I just mentioned about, are they ever going to find a young guy who can play behind John for a couple of years and, you know, be sure about that? So they would have had a look at him and maybe they could figure out something going forward. Perhaps that works well. The other thing I would say, the Luke Richard Mbah Moute types, I feel like that's someone who's probably going to come around in February. You're going to find a way to get one of those guys. You're going to end up waiving someone and freeing a little bit of money here. And after the All-Star break, or remember the calendar's all revamped now. So I guess before the All-Star break, that's probably that type of player is going to become available because he's going to be on a team that is failing. He's going to be able to, you know, be a veteran bench contributor on a playoff team type guy. And you can probably score him, around that period. So that those things don't give me as much pause as maybe they do you, but, Ian Clark, highly interesting to me. And I just, I know they have all their money wrapped up in the three guys now who lead the starting group. Still, it seems conceivable that there's going to be some way where they can find someone for the bench who can play more than 1 year, play capably, and be around for 2 years or even 3 years. Kind of the way, remember there was a guy named Garrett Temple? He came off the bench, and obviously he had his shortcomings, but you know, it feels like since I know he hasn't been gone long, but that there would be more than just one of him and they would be around, but we haven't seen anyone like that in the past few years as they keep flipping parts around.
The Wizards just general take on Meeks is that yes, he's had a bunch of injuries the last 3 years, but it's not a consistent, like, his right knee is the same issue, or his left big toe, or, you know, he has migraines, whatever. It's been sort of freak injuries, and, you know, we'll see. The Wizards have been historically, this organization historically has been the king of freak injuries that, you know, knock a player out forever. Jan Mahimi, perhaps the latest poster child. But I think they're not that concerned about that perspective. If he does what he's done in the past, he gives them a 40% 3-point shooter. He does it at the backcourt. Again, even if you had kept Bogdanović, it was a weird fit between Bogdanović, Otto, and Oubre. They all played the three. None of them really played the two. I think that was, you know, part of what caused them problems in the playoffs to some degree. So positionally, he does a little bit better. I think they seem to like him, his who he is as a person and all that. So I don't really have an issue with it. I did sort of wonder, and I still, I guess, do, why you had to do it on day two. That's my only thing. If the same move happens in 3 weeks, does it make any difference? I guess not, right? It's just sort of like, well, what was the need to do it in day two? But like I said, if they thought he was the best option of the limited options they were going to have based on the money.
Right.
It is what it
is. That's
what
I was going to say. I think it's totally related to the money of that they have very little wiggle room and they have to be sure that they get something done, immediately. And one other segue here. I know I keep doing this, but you mentioned Kelly Oubre. The easiest way for the bench to take a massive leap this season is for him to be much better and be a consistent player at a minimum. So, as people who listen to this know, you know, kind of my view of him, and I'm not bringing this up to bash him. I'm simply saying the easiest way, no matter who they signed, for their bench to become much better this year is for him to be a consistent player, a better player, a reliable player they can sprinkle in and out with the starters, and who doesn't fall off a cliff if he is playing with the second unit. So, as much as these other guys, you know, they pay them whatever and they sign them whatever, their route to having a much better bench is Mahimi healthy and Kelly Oubre being at a minimum a consistent player who, you know, can give you at least one really good thing or at least pretty good thing on a nightly basis, whether that's defense or making open threes, whatever it is.
No, and that segue is fine into what I had here on my list, because I had a note on my rundown here is, I'm not saying Kelly Oubre would be the most valuable player on the team by any stretch, but if we're saying, okay, how do the Wizards get from 49 in that second round plateau to not even just getting more wins, but legitimately staring Cleveland in the face or Boston and saying, okay, we're going to do this. I mean, unless John Wall and Bradley Beal make leaps to first team level all-NBA kind of players, or, you know, things like that, if Kelly Oubre can just shoot 33% from three, be consistent on team defense with mm-hmm. the athleticism he had, that's the thing. That's what gets them from being, hey, this is a spunky team that could give Cleveland fits, to, okay, we can look Cleveland in the eye and we have enough firepower on all levels to do. So I totally agree. He's the thing based on his potential, and reality, they don't have too many young guys on the bench. He's the one guy I think that could do that. Here's the question I wrote down for you. This was going to be for you to make jokes. What's more likely to happen? Oubre shoots 33% from three next season, or the Wizards keep their first round pick?
I'll say Oubre shooting 33% from three, because he's wide open for at least half of these shots, and for God's sake, they should be going in.
He did. I talked to Drew Hanlon, his trainer, Beal's trainer as well, out in Vegas. I'm still going to play that part of the for the podcast later. But he talked about, and Oubre did as well when he was out there, talked about that they've completely changed the form on his shot. That before, his form would have his hand right in his face, and now they've made it he's got a cleaner look. So, you know, we'll see, but I'm with you on that. I mean, it's still going to drive you and me, the two of us, crazy when people want to like project that he's like already better than Otto Porter today or whatever. But it is fair to say that with him, that's potentially where they, have where their biggest growth is.
Right. They have the room for the biggest growth is right there with, Mr. Fashionable, for sure.
Fashion forward. I got to make that stick. You mentioned Mahimi before. You mentioned the minor procedure. On a scale of 1 to Andre Blatch's entire career, how concerned are you that the Wizards brought back Mahimi and Gortat?
Not really. To be honest, they were, you know, because they were stuck. This is always the weird thing to me, is that either fans or some folks in the media identify, hey, this is the team's major problem, and especially in a salary cap league. And so they're like, oh, just trade them. Well, other teams know that's a major problem. They don't want the problem too. They're not like, oh, can we give $64 million to a guy who was injured all last year and plays a position that's being phased out in our league? That's probably not what other teams are looking for when they're trying to improve, unless they're like Brooklyn or something. I think you had to do it because, as Gortat rightly points out, he plays all the time. And this is back-to-back seasons for Mahimi where he was banged up, first in Indiana and then here. So you need to have someone who can play that position a portion of the time, even if it's not a stretch five. So, no, they have to be sure they're sure. I'm curious if they would be – I'm curious what position they'll be in at the trade deadline and what they would be able to create – be willing to create then. And be able to create, perhaps with Gortat's contract. That's, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. Not at all saying that I would be looking forward to them trading Gortat. Just in general terms, I think that's going to come up at that point and, be compelling to see what they can do around the league with that first round pick you just mentioned. Probably doing some traveling in that situation as well.
Yeah, I'm not that concerned about it. I'm surprised that they're both back. I thought, based on what I, my sense, but also you know, reality and what I sort of heard, was that Gortat in particular would probably be gone. But I think what's clear looking at that, just the NBA as a whole, the center market dried up dramatically. I mean, there really just weren't, there wasn't much going on out there for anybody, in free agency or trades. And you know, you can look around at other teams and see people are, you know, stuck with kind of what they have. And, you know, even a guy like, this is not the exact same thing, but like Nerlens Noel is still a free agent. He's a restricted free agent, which is part of the issue with that. But I mean, Otto Porter was a restricted free agent, got a max offer. The center, Nerlens Noel is not the same type of center as Gortat and Mahimi, but you know, the big men right now are not where the action is. So they didn't have much to do. Everybody keeps going back to Mahimi's contract. You mentioned before an innocuous tweet. You didn't think it was a big deal. I tweeted out that Mahimi, you know, that Brooks said Mahimi had this minor procedure, and I got like immediately like tons of responses. Oh, of course that happened. I guess this means he's out 2 years. You know, all this stuff. You know, look, at the end of the day, the contract is paid. It's a sunk cost. But just because they overpaid, and just because the fit with Gortat, from the first second they did it, I thought was weird, it doesn't mean Mahimi can't play. Their defense was much better with that second unit, those 25 games late in the regular season that he played when he was on the court. He can play. It's a weird fit. It's possible that two of your top four or five highest paid guys on the team won't be on the court for the last 5 minutes of games if the other team has going small. That's weird. But it doesn't mean he can't play. And, you know, Scott Brooks likes using big men. He'll sure figure out a way to do it. The key is Mahimi staying healthy. So it's not ideal, but it's not, if you look past the contract that's already happened, the roster part of it is not, I think people are too often looking at the contract saying disaster, but they're ignoring that he actually is a good player.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And one other thing I'd like to add is that we talk about how the league is so pick and roll based. You have to have someone who is a willing and capable screener. This is what centers do, but like when Golden State goes small, you still have Draymond as some heft there, right? That's what makes them so complicated, is that they have a willing, hardworking guy who's going to screen and does all the other things he's going to do. So if you want to go super small, a lot of times you end up with a guy who, it's like posting up someone who never posts up because they have a mismatch. That may seem like in general concept a good idea, but it might not, it just doesn't work out well sometimes. Same thing I think applies for when you need that screener to kind of get everything else you're doing going. So the complication is, do you have a stretch guy at the other end? And we saw this with Olynyk, right? In the Celtics series, that defending him on the other end became a huge problem when you went small, and then it was a problem when you went big. And so I'm going to throw out here's the biggest wild card of this enormously long podcast that we're doing that better be like 8 parts. Maybe Mike Scott ends up being that quote unquote center with the rest of the group, with him and Markieff. You have two hard-nosed guys out there who can shoot threes and set a screen, definitely on a point guard, whoever is guarding Wall, or definitely on the two guard, whoever is guarding Bradley Beal. So that type of thing intrigues me, because at 6'8", and being physical, and then obviously Markieff is even bigger and also very physical, you still have a screen setter, but you also have guys who can spread the floor.
By the way, we should have gone to the Kenner League tonight. They've reached the playoff round, and somehow, I don't even know how this works, Georgetown has one of their recruits playing on a team with their current players. Like I say recruit, I mean a guy they're trying to get, not a commit. And this is like fascinating. I don't understand how this could possibly be legal, but apparently it's kosher. I don't know. So we should have gone there. We could have done the podcast from there.
I think Georgetown added Kenner League games to their non-conference schedule, and refused to play a bunch of D1 teams.
Dude,
did they tweak that?
I'm going to do a separate podcast on that. But what a freaking joke. Did you see the thing they bailed on this Nike event?
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Unbelievable. I've tried thinking about this. What could the possible reason be, other than being chicken shit, that you're going to lose all three games? Which,
oh, that's 100% the reason.
But, like, it's early in the season. Patrick Ewing is going to, like, it's basically 3 days worth of the announcers saying Patrick Ewing walked into a bad spot, but he'll get it fixed. How is right. that bad? It's, right. Oh, my God. So dumb.
Right. Not to mention he's a rookie college coach. Don't you want him exposed to that situation?
Yeah.
Instead of running away from it and being like, oh, here's a terrible team that we're going to play at the Verizon Center in front of 2,000 people, and you might win 56-52 in November.
It's unbelievable. Don't get me. All right, let's veer back into this before I. okay, yes, it's going long, but it's not actually going long. It was just going to be long. You just have to deal. All right, one more Wizardsy question, then we'll get to some NBA stuff to liven things up for Todd. Oh, you're fine. Don't worry. You got nothing to do. Ted Leonsis.
That's not true.
Ted Leonsis today, he has said this before, he made a point of saying that the Wizards are the only team in the league with three max players that they drafted. Obviously,
three homegrown max players, yeah.
Yes. People were asking about other teams. Like Golden State did not give Draymond Green and Klay Thompson the full max. They got close. They got a lot of money, but they didn't get the full max.
Right.
He's making that a big deal, and I'm giving him credit and the Wizards credit for they drafted the guys, they developed the guys, they kept the guys. That's all at a base level. That's what you want. But at the same point, they had to pay them all. I mean, the Otto one was the only one where they had to deal with some other team involved. They didn't get, you know, Wall and Beal, and I know it's not the exact same thing, but they didn't, you know, Durant, they didn't Durant the situation and take a lot less. Durant gets way more in endorsements than they do, so he can maybe do that. But they didn't do that. Is Leontes right to give the Wizards a lot of credit? If that's the way he's talking about it, that they do have this situation with three homegrown max players, or do you look at it as, well, wait a minute, what does it say about your organization that you kind of had to give them all the max to maybe have them stay?
He's right in that those three picks have all worked, and those three guys have all progressively become better, obviously on varying scales. John, from the number one overall pick to third team all NBA, fourth time all star, Beal finally healthy, on the verge, still on the verge, on the verge, on the verge of being an all star, which we hear every year. And then Porter becoming a very good and insanely efficient offensive player last year. So they get credit for all those things because, as they well know around here, just because you have like a number three pick, say, that doesn't mean that guy's necessarily going to pan out. You can blow that, and it can be an issue, and then it can make for funny hashtags, and then he even comes up all this time later in a podcast when you're asking about sliding scales, and there's a Jan Vesely scale. So they get credit for that. However, to your point, they also don't – they had to do all these things. But John makes – sense, and you would want to do that, right? Because as we said earlier, he makes everything go. Beal was a restricted free agent. You saw him take a big leap last year. He's still younger, certainly younger than John. That makes sense. But so you're definitely having to do that. Otto was the one that you got backed into a corner, essentially as a result of the failed Kevin Durant pursuit, the failed progress of Kelly Oubre. I'm sure they thought at this point, they could probably plug Oubre in there and save a bunch of money and put that money elsewhere. That hasn't happened. So those two things, no Durant, Oubre not ready to be the starter, force him into a corner with Porter, and then they kind of spin it into this, oh, you know, this is a guy we took and have developed, and he's become a good player, so we paid him. So I would say that's where they get the ding. And also, it locks them in. I mean, they have no choice. It's these guys or bust. So they need them all to stay healthy. They need them all to stay at, as productive as they are, preferably from their point of view, more so. So, and they left themselves no wiggle room. They have made their very clear bet, and the next 5, 6, 7 years will tell us if it was the right one.
All right, many thanks, as always, to Todd Dybus with the Washington Times for stopping by. Of course, if you want to hit him up on Twitter, @Todd_Dybus. And if you have gotten this far into the podcast and you're on Twitter, shoot Todd a tweet and ask him who would be 3 players that would be on the Todd Dybus All-Stars. Just curious what he would tell you guys. 3 players that would be on the Todd Dybus All-Star NBA team. All right, so enough of that. More to come on the schedule. We should be hearing more in a little bit. By the way, I didn't even mention this earlier, but with that October, 18th start, that's almost a full 2 weeks before the typical start of the NBA season. So they did move the schedule up in part to try to spread out some of the overall schedule, so try to avoid fewer back-to-backs and things along those lines. As our friend Jeff Zilgit with USA Today reported on today, I guess there's there may be something coming from the NBA with regards to rules about teams resting players just for the sake of rest, essentially. The Wizards really didn't have this kind of an issue, which is probably why, for me, I don't really think of it as a big issue. But obviously, when you had those national TV games, Cleveland or what have you, and LeBron doesn't play or things like that, it makes for, it's not an ideal situation. So apparently that may be something to keep an eye on here in the next couple of days as well. Or just go check out Jeff's work at USA Today, and you can find it there. All right. Many thanks to you guys, as always, for listening. If you got any thoughts, questions on the podcast, again, hit me up at Ben Standig. You want to shoot me an email, bstandig1@gmail.com. Definitely a time of the year where we can ponder big picture stuff, seeing as how it is the off season. All right. We'll end it there. Until next time, see ya.
Neal gets open for 3. Dagger!
Bobby Fry, Cox! Bull Fry, smoke coming shot. Dagger!